I asked on Twitter the other day what the most versatile salad ingredient was.
That was good.
Nate responded by saying lettuce. What an a-hole.
Welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. My name is Jody Avergan. Perhaps you've noticed that there is a lot of news out there, but we're actually going to narrow it way down today and spend basically the whole show on one story and one question, the state of the Russia investigation, and our big question, which seems to be kind of the question of the moment: what would happen if Donald Trump fired Robert Mueller? Here to answer that question, not right now, this is just the intro, so here technically to say hello, Editor-in-Chief Nate Silver. Hello, Nate.
Hello.
And he did it. He really brought it. Claire Malone, can you live up to that billing?
Claire is already exasperated. Yeah.
That's politics reporter Claire Malone, and politics editor Micah Cohen is here.
Hello, everybody.
See, we got two great natural hellos and Nate. One other note, at the end of the show, we're going to do a quick primer on the Illinois 3rd District primary, which is taking place tomorrow because, well, we think it's interesting and because we can go from big think stuff about Robert Mueller to very narrow stuff about the Illinois 3rd District primary. That's our show. But this question, Trump and Mueller, it's very much on the mind, probably for good reason. So let's just lay out what happened over the last few days that has us thinking about this. You guys can jump in and help me if I missed anything. Starting on Friday, Attorney General Jeff Sessions fired former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe based on a recommendation from the FBI Disciplinary Office. They found misconduct by McCabe related to a conversation with a reporter. We can get into that if we'd like. But people also see McCabe as an ally of James Comey, and he's been under attack by the president for a long time. So that set off a lot of Mueller-Russia alarm bells. Then we wake up early Saturday morning. Donald Trump's lawyer, John Dowd, told reporters that Mueller's probe should probably end, and he pointed to the McCabe firing as evidence that the whole thing is tainted. And then the tweeting started. I'm not going to read all the tweets. But on Sunday, Trump tweeted about McCabe and Mueller, which I think was the first time he's actually mentioned Mueller by name in a tweet. Is that right?
I mean, not counting retweets.
No.
I love that that's become a thing, by the way, where everyone's like, it's the first documented instance of him knowing who he is.
Right, it's true. We all know he knew who he is, but nevertheless, those particular letters appeared in a Trump... What do you call it? What was it, a natural tweet versus a retweet?
A natural.
An original tweet?
A tweet.
A tweet.
But what about the manual retweet?
Anyway, let me read one of these original tweets penned by one at Real Donald Trump. There were others, but this one seems to really be the one that's kind of landing us where we are right now. Quote, the Mueller probe should have never been started in that there was no collusion and there was no crime. It was based on fraudulent activities and a fake dossier, capital F, capital D, paid for by crooked Hillary, capital C, capital H, and the DNC, and improperly used in FISA court for surveillance of my campaign, witch hunt, exclamation point. So there is a lot going on there.
That first sentence is a bit more complicated than the sentences in Trump's tweets usually are.
The probe should have never been started in that there was no collusion and there was no crime.
Yeah.
It seems pretty straightforward.
So you think one of the attorney bros is writing these tweets?
Ooh.
In that there was.
He did go to Penn.
That's true. He does have a great brain. Did he say that one?
Someone might say he's a very stable genius.
Go ahead.
Wow, I glanced over in that there was. That's a very freaking funny construction. That sounds very lawyerly.
That's what I said.
I'm agreeing with you.
Okay.
We're starting out on the right foot this time.
Yeah, this is great. Enjoy this moment, listeners.
In that there was. Wow.
So let me ask Claire, you can jump in on this, and I think it's worth asking, why is there this flurry of activity and why right now?
Well, who knows? But I think this idea that Trump wants to get the Mueller investigation over and done with. He wants to be finished with it. Everyone thinks like that's what Trump really wants, and that he has had a lot of people around him that have said, listen, like let's hang back here. Let's not maybe say things in the public eye that suggest that we want to get rid of the Mueller investigation. Perhaps the fact that he's had a lot of people leaving the White House maybe has something to do with Trump feels sort of, I don't know, psychologically freed to do what he wants, to put it all out there. And perhaps that is why he has kind of directed his legal team to be a bit more offensive and say, listen, the Mueller probe needs to stop.
In terms of those things that I just listed, firing McCabe, John Dowd saying this thing needs to wrap up, and then Trump going on this sort of tweet storm, which of those feel like the biggest setting some alarm bells to you, Micah?
Oh, that's interesting. Probably McCabe.
I think the McCabe thing is more, it shows like a certain premeditation of them thinking like, okay, you know, if McCabe is going to be a primary witness in the Mueller investigation, then it would be good for us to sully McCabe's reputation, that sort of thing. I don't know. Obviously, like, the lawyer thing is striking. But I think the McCabe thing has been, it's sort of months of laying the groundwork and for something to finally happen.
Mm-hmm. No, and that campaign is definitely happening, the campaign to, like, sully McCabe's name. Yeah. I guess my question is, I still think there's a chance that the McCabe firing
is weird
and might be a result of a campaign to, is either a direct or indirect result of the campaign to discredit him. And that matters. So direct means they just were trying to get him out and they got him out on a flimsy pretext. It could also be indirect, though, in the sense that maybe McCabe was less than forthcoming.
Yeah.
And maybe the McCabe thing isn't that big of a deal.
I don't know. It's weird because just to clarify for listeners, is that the report by the disciplinary committee at the FBI recommending that McCabe be fired is not public. So we don't know
the details.
The details. Although McCabe has said it's based on a misunderstanding. Like he went back and corrected the record on something after a session of questioning. And that is where the failure to be forthcoming sort of slap on the wrist and recommendation to be fired is coming from. So it's a little bit, it's still murky.
Yeah.
But it's being spun politically, which is why we're talking about it.
Yeah. So in terms of, you know, where we stand right now, Nate, today versus, say, a week ago, do you think that it's more likely that Trump will fire Robert Mueller now? Does everyone, you know?
Yes.
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 Does everyone kind of agree? I mean, how much?
Yes.
And so on whatever Nate scale you want to measure, how much has your kind of like sensors gone up in terms of this being a possibility? We'll talk about the effect afterwards.
So I was joking that we should use like a Smokey the Bear like fire danger sign. It should be like a Bob Mueller's going to be fired danger sign. Mm-hmm. And I think we go to like we're at severe danger stage.
Hmm.
On the Smokey the Bear scale, there's like severe is like actually like only like the fourth highest stage. There's like extreme and like severe extreme and like, oh my gosh.
You're on fire.
You're on fire right now. Trump is a pretty transparent thinker. Okay. So his headspace is like, I really don't like what this guy is doing. Yeah. I feel like this is unfair. Like there's no deeper strategy or trick there, I don't think, right?
However, a little bit of a Southern drawl in your Trump impersonation there?
I wasn't trying to sound like Trump.
Oh, I see. Okay. Gotcha.
Southern Donald Trump is a weird... But Trump, I think, does recognize on some level, like, when something has, like, serious consequences versus somewhat serious consequences. It doesn't mean he necessarily has a lot of restraint on occasionally doing, like, the super serious thing. But I don't know. I feel like it's just... It's just obvious. He's using Mueller by name. His lawyer is building a case for why Mueller should be fired. Some of the moderating influences in the White House have been lost. Some of the people who might be moderating, he can't really trust anymore or doesn't trust anymore. I mean, I just don't see that many constraints on him, apart from him having some deeper sense that this could get me in a lot of trouble. But I don't know.
But don't you think he just kind of wants to do it? Like
he tried to do it once already.
Yeah, right? Yeah. No, what I'm saying is
that's
like
a good point.
It's just like where he's just kind of like, I don't know, what would happen if I pressed that button? Like maybe something's just like, I don't know.
It's like that's what's that social psychology experiment where they like put the kid in front of the cupcake and they're like, you can either eat the cupcake now or you can wait 5 minutes and we'll get a second cupcake.
Yeah.
So right now one of the big constraints on like Trump firing Mueller is that it takes a lot of steps to do it, right? It's not clear the order of operations for how you actually do it. You probably have to fire Rosenstein first or, you know, and then go down the food chain as Nixon kind of did. If you fire Jeff Sessions, though, and you appoint someone who is a lackey, not that Jeff Sessions is exactly free of Trump's influence, right, but he recused himself, then it becomes a lot easier. Then you just call the attorney general, and although, you know, I'm not enough of a legal scholar to know if there are no implications at all. But so if you fire Jeff Sessions, that's when you go from Smokey the Bear severe to extreme danger.
Maybe we should be talking about that.
about firing Jeff Sessions?
Yeah.
Do you guys think if Trump fires Mueller, will it be out of a fit of pique or will it be strategic?
I think out of a fit of pique. But the thing about Trump is that, like, those two things are not mutually exclusive exactly. It's kind of like I don't think he's the sharpest, like, long-term strategic thinker necessarily, but he could decide that, look, I'm in trouble, so let's build a case for firing.
Retrofit.
Can I say something? Yeah. There were stories last week that Trump was talking about moving Pruitt from EPA to replace Sessions at DOJ. So it's
Pruitt,
like,
would do it.
Of course Pruitt would do
That's
it.
That's why they call him Do It Pruitt.
Do Pruitt.
I mean, Pruitt is one of the most effective cabinet members, you know, for sort of dismantling or, what do you call, sort of castrating an agency.
Dismantling,
I think,
work too.
Well, I wanted to go for something stronger. I wanted to put you all on edge. But I think that's interesting that an actual factual person has been floated to replace Sessions. The same thing happened with Tillerson. So just something, food for thought. So there is a name out there.
Yeah. So let's move a little bit into imagining, you know, what would happen if Trump fired Mueller, and we can start to paint a picture, maybe go group by group and think about how they may react to these developments. So we'll talk about the public, then we'll talk about the GOP, and then we'll talk about Democrats. So, Micah, do you want to just lay out, like, kind of what is the state of how the public feels about the Russia investigation right now and Robert Mueller and so forth?
People are, you know, it's as you would expect, it's overall polarizing. People are polarized by party on whether the Russia investigation matters. Most people have an opinion on Mueller, but a sizable minority, about 40%, according to most polls, have never heard of him. So it's still pretty unformed. And then once you get beyond the kind of general partisan split on Russia, you find that healthy majorities have faith that Mueller's running a fair investigation among those who have an opinion, right? And think he should be allowed to finish it. So overall, I think the point is sort of that Russia as an issue is still polarizing and is partisan. The more you get into the details, at least at this point, public opinion is on Mueller's side.
Right. The difference is a lot of, I think it kind of comes down to the difference between, do you think Trump colluded with Russia versus, oh, he might have done something wrong when he fired Comey. This is the more sophisticated version of what voters are, I think, parsing through, which is most people, I think, are kind of like, I don't know if Donald Trump colluded with Russia. Maybe they're trying to, like, influence him, but whatever. But then people are also like, I don't know, he fired the FBI director. That seems bad. Therefore, Mueller should be able to pursue his investigation and go through with it, and people would be alarmed if he wasn't allowed to continue.
I wonder how many of the 40% who don't know who Mueller is, know who Mueller is instead.
They're actually just been taken. The pollster has just been mispronouncing it all along.
I wonder how many people would confuse Robert Mueller with the lawyer from Law & Order Special Victims Unit.
Is that the same name?
No, but they look exactly the same.
Most people, the vast majority of people, 70% according to Marist, think Mueller should be allowed to finish his investigation. Just 14% said he should be fired. So if you look at it, it's sort of like if Trump goes an extreme route, the more extreme, the less likely I think public opinion will be on his side. The other thing I would just point out, though, is, again, going to the back to that 40% of people who haven't heard of Mueller, there's a big group of Americans who haven't made up their mind on this stuff.
Because there isn't a lot of...
That's right.
There's no real... You know, we all know that the investigation is unfolding. You get, like, drips and drabs of, oh, they're subpoenaing the Trump company, things like that. But yeah, we have no conclusions. And I think you're right that the American public is being smart about this. Like, it's kind of like, well, we don't know.
Wait and see.
So would firing Mueller then be a big clarifying moment that would, I guess,
yes, it would be
force,
a huge but now you have to beat me. Right. It'd be a huge deal.
So
yeah.
Let's
wake up. I mean, I think there's too much, like...
But in terms of how the public reacts, do you think it would then push a lot of these people who kind of don't have an opinion off the fence, so to speak? How would that play out
with the
public?
Era, we're not talking about a huge fraction of people. Mm-hmm. But look, people don't know that much, but you want to be like the counterpuncher, right? Where if it looks like the investigation's continuing on for a long time and there are some threads, but they're hard to weave together, and Trump and his allies start to complain about, hey, hasn't lived up to the billing, like, that might sway a few people. But if you fire the guy conducting the investigation, I mean, look, one of the few things, there are two things that had a big negative effect on Trump's approval rating. One of which was when they began to debate the health care bill, and the other which was firing Comey. Mm-hmm. That had a 3 or 4 point downward swing, which in this era is a lot, it's I big, guess, where yeah. a lot of things would swing things by 1 point or something, right? People who are on the fence about, am I sympathetic to Trump or not, will come off the fence if Mueller is fired. And it would be a catalyzing event for...
There would be a public outcry.
Yeah.
So you'd get polls showing, I think, 65, 70% of people oppose the move. I think support would probably increase from where it is now. So right now, 14% say it's okay to fire Mueller. You know, once Trump doesn't, maybe that increases to 25%, something like that. But the vast, you know, I think polls would show the vast majority of people, almost all Democrats, most independents, and maybe like, you know, Republicans are split. I think
yeah,
that's what
I was
going to
say.
Like.
I wish we had polled. So in our most recent iteration of the reluctant Trump mm-hmm. polling that we didn't specifically ask about Mueller's firing.
Oh, we should have asked.
We should have asked specifically. But we did. I mean, one thing that sort of, I think, gets to how these reluctant Trump voters feel is we asked people how seriously they would consider it if Mueller determines the president obstructed justice by interfering with the investigation into his campaign's contacts with Russian government officials. And so 73% of Americans said very serious. 64% of reluctant Trumpers said, yes, it would be serious. And only 44% of other Trump voters felt the same way. So I think reluctant Trump voters are more on the side of the majority of the American yeah. public, where they're saying like, yeah, this is a thing that we is serious and we're talking about rule of law and that needs to kind of continue. And I would bet that those people would have a very negative view of
Mueller.
Firing Mueller,
yeah.
especially since Mueller is a Republican. You know, like I think there's been a lot of stuff out there to say, you know, Mueller is sort of like Caesar's wife is without reproach. Like he is doing all he can to run a very clean investigation, that sort of thing. So,
I mean, I think you'd also have like civil unrest is not the right. But you'd have protests.
Would there be protests?
Yeah, I just think there's, you know, one of my critiques, I wrote this morning about how like actually a lot of my critiques of White House coverage have dissipated. People have gotten smarter. I do think there's so much news generated by the White House that there's this like flattening where sometimes if you read the daily news cycle, it's hard to differentiate the very important stories from the medium important stories to the not so important but sensational stories that have a good headline. I do think, again, I don't necessarily predict how things would evolve thereafter. Mm-hmm. I do think this would break that paradigm and
yeah.
this would be a gigantic story and would occupy a huge amount of the news cycle from now through the midterms, and the midterms would kind of be used, would become in part a referendum on this firing.
So that actually sets us up nicely to talk about what we're going to do next, which is discuss how the GOP and other elected officials might respond. But first, let me tell you that this week's podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets for every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or you need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek is by far the easiest way to shop for tickets. You could be anywhere with just a few taps of your phone app. You will instantly find seats. It's designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Right now, you can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code 538 today. That's the promo code 538, the numbers. Don't spell it out. The numbers 538 for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. This week's podcast is also brought to you by Blue Bottle Coffee. Nothing gets your morning going like that first cup of coffee, but not just any coffee. It has to be delicious, flavorful coffee that'll change the way that you look at your morning cup of brew. Blue Bottle Coffee provides the most delicious coffee in the world right to your door. It is roasted and shipped to your home within 48 hours of placing your order, so the beans arrive at peak freshness. One sip of Blue Bottle Coffee will make you realize that you've been drinking subpar coffee your entire life. But don't feel too bad about that, because now you're moving forward. and you've got it all figured out. There's coffee and there's Blue Bottle Coffee. Well, what's the difference? For starters, Blue Bottle Coffee has an insane dedication to what they do. They search the planet far and wide to secure exclusive relationships with independent growers all over the world to get you the most delicious and sustainable coffee there is. And if you don't know exactly what kind of flavor you want, what kind of coffee you want, you can take the Blue Bottle Coffee Match Quiz to find the perfect coffee just for you. Hurry to bluebottlecoffee.com/politics for $10 off your first subscription order right now. That's bluebottlecoffee.com/politics. All right. So we talked a little bit about how the public might respond to this. Now let's talk about the people the public elected, particularly the GOP. So before we speculate on how they might respond, over the weekend, has the GOP responded in any particular way? Have we seen people start to just sort of say, slow your roll here?
Yeah, you saw Paul Ryan issue something. You saw kind of the usual suspects in Flake and McCain saying, like, the investigation needs to continue. Trey Gowdy, James Lankford, you know, like, there are a bunch of people who are congressional Republicans who are saying, like, whoa, pump the brakes here.
The serious Republicans, quote unquote.
Yes. Any surprising inclusions or omissions in that list of people who spoke out?
Not overall, really. I think it was the usual suspects. I was a little bit surprised. I could be wrong, but that Ryan said something, not forcefully, but like medium forcefully, medium rare. But McConnell didn't. Claire's giving me a look that impression is wrong.
I mean,
it could be, yeah.
Just like maybe Mitch was just like, well, I don't know. Maybe it's good.
I don't know. Well,
people really like Nate's Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, I can't do it. I can't
do it again.
I cannot do it under pressure.
It has to be organic.
I'm not listening to Mitch McConnell.
It's. I mean, a Kentucky accent is harder because it's a little more marbly.
Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, it's like you're rolling, thumping around.
All right, let's get to this then, Nate. And I know you have some thoughts on this. But we've talked on this podcast a fair amount, and we just did, and we've done it before, about how firing Mueller would be a bit of a red line for the GOP. What indication do we have about how red that line is? And then what indication do we have about how the GOP might react?
Nixon.
That's your precedent here.
It's a more relevant precedent than, like, piddly stuff that Trump does. Mm-hmm. I mean, Nixon, it took a long time for the GOP, both GOP voters and for GOP electeds, to turn on Nixon. And remember, first of all, there is safety in the herd. So if the herd is mostly protecting Trump and a few deviants are going out, you know, McCain and Trey Gowdy and Jeff Flake or whatever, right? Well, they're kind of losers anyway, who in most cases are not running for re-election. But there's herd-like behavior, number one. And number two, they're just like non-linear effects, right? If you have something that like catalyzes public opinion, like something as severe as firing Mueller, that's just like way more severe than, like, frankly, like Charlottesville or something, you know? I mean, it really creates, although I think our colleague, our friend Julia would maybe disagree, it creates a constitutional crisis. It's not just like a important news story. It really calls into question kind of the role of Congress in investigating improprieties by the executive branch. And it's extremely serious.
And the fact that it's happening in a midterm year.
And that, that complicates things. I mean, it's almost like if Trump is going to fire Mueller, he should almost like do it now, because the closer it gets to the midterm, the more painful it gets for the GOP.
Free advice.
Donald. The closer it is to the midterm, does it make the GOP less likely to stand by him or more likely?
I think at some point it's a non-issue because there's not enough time to, like,
to do anything.
You know, even now, it's like, it's not like Trump is not going to be impeached unless, like, there is a P-tape or something, right? But he's not going to be impeached before November. It just takes a long time to do these things, right? I mean, something incredibly damning would have to come, like direct, like, hey, Vlad, what's going on, bro, kind of stuff would have to happen. But anyway, the point is, my analogy that I made on Twitter was that, like, firing Mueller would be a magnitude 8 earthquake, and trying to analogize or infer what happens in a magnitude 8 event from magnitude 5 to magnitude 6 doesn't really work very well. And by the way, there are not zero cracks in this foundation. So the most severe event so far, as I mentioned, was Trump firing Comey, and that resulted in a big drop in his approval rating, and it resulted in Mueller being appointed. And that was a major event, and this would be much more severe than that.
Well, here's the thing, though, and here's where I think the Nixon analogy is helpful. I think a lot of Democrats have it in their mind that at some point Trump will cross the line and you will see a wholesale abandonment of Trump by elected Republicans. I don't think we're ever going to see that. And frankly, I don't think you would need that to see significant change in terms of repercussions for Trump. I think the real question is like, okay, let's say 10% of elected Republicans have taken an anti-Trump position today. The real question is like, what would it take to get that to 25 or 30%?
Right.
Because during Watergate, even at the low points for Nixon during Watergate, I think a majority of elected Republicans or close still supported him. So the question isn't when does 100% of elected Republicans turn on Trump? It's like when does 30% turn Republican?
Right. When do the people who are already at the margins of Trump and like leaking to reporters behind the scene, yeah, this guy is a mess. Yeah, this guy screwed up our NRA thing before he corrected it again. You know, like people who are just totally frustrated with what they perceive as incompetence to like traditional Republican values and policy issues, where they're finally like, okay, well, this is an easy way. This gives me a permission structure to say peace. Like, I'm not doing
more
this
to
anymore.
Point, or to that 30%, actually, a third is a relevant number, because if all Democrats want Trump to be removed from office and a third of Republicans do, that's two thirds of the Senate, roughly.
And just to put a bow on that, it's not like you don't need Devin Nunes to turn on Trump.
Right.
You can't do it with just Flake, though, right? You need, like, whatever the
Pat Toomey?
Yeah, it's like the Pat Toomeys of the world.
Ron Johnson, right. Cory Gardner.
Right.
People who are not particularly moderate Republicans, but who are in somewhat swing states, right? Yeah. And you probably also need, like, the Corkers and the Lindsey Grahams and the people who kind of stand up for process. Those two groups combined. We should do that math, probably. But I think that adds up to, like,
close to a third.
Close to a third.
Yeah.
So we probably should have done this right at the beginning. But when we say we've all used the phrase turn on Trump, when we say that, what exactly do we mean?
Literally turn their back and wave their hands in the air.
I thought you were going to say literally turn on Trump.
Oh, God. That might turn be next on. Monday's
mean,
conversation
mean,
after that 60 Minutes
we mean
interview.
Public statements. In the vein of what we saw from who we've called the traditional group of who speaks out against Trump. So people saying on the record, like, this is undermining two democratic processes, that kind of thing. Public statements where they say to their constituents or, you know, whatever they take to Twitter, this will not stand.
But specifically still about firing Mueller, or does that spectrum extend to then sort of some larger anti-Trump stance? Is that what we say when we say turn on Trump? Like, I will no longer work with our president. I no longer support his agenda, or whatever you want to phrase it.
I don't know.
Does that count? I mean, what's the range of turning?
I think it'll have to be directly tied to Mueller.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some Republicans kind of call on other Republicans to hold everything hostage to getting Trump to behave on kind of norm and ethical and this type of Russia stuff and say, I'm not going to work with you on taxes unless you do X, Y, or Z. I think that's unlikely to happen. But if Trump fired Mueller...
That's a sure way to get your constituents pissed at you.
Right. But if like Trump fired Mueller, I think Claire's right. It would be like, how many Republicans denounce the move but also call on Congress to form a joint committee to investigate?
Yeah, there are ways to reappoint Mueller or pass legislation that makes him unfireable or appoint someone new. So there are tangible steps as far as whether impeachment proceedings begin and how much of a voice they're given.
Do you think they would?
I think that Republicans would dally.
I don't think it would happen.
I think they would dally because they think they can buy enough time until the midterms. Yeah. Assuming it happened. I mean, if it happened right now,
it's
there might almost be enough time. But if it happened in, like, May.
It's not going to happen before the midterm.
I don't know.
I just have real faith in partisanship.
Yeah. I do think people are like, oh, Trump won't be I'm a smart, savvy pundit, and I think Trump won't be impeached. You know, the odds of Trump being impeached are some large fraction of the odds that Democrats will take the House. Because impeachment just means the House, guys.
But not before the midterm.
I think to a first approximation, I think the like.
Well, actually, is Nate Silver's rom-com about always being right.
Well, actually, to a first approximation, I think people overrate how much action can be taken against Trump before the midterms, but maybe like a little bit underrate what a game changer it is if, I mean, first of all, if Democrats control the House, then it's going to be investigation city, right? Maybe to the point where it isn't necessarily helpful in 2020 for Democrats, but leave that alone for now, right? There's going to be widespread GOP panic. There's going to be investigation after investigation. And there are going to be, from like day one, impeachment proceedings against the president if Mueller is fired. And frankly, maybe even if he's not at this point. But like, that's the issue the election is going to be contested on in the event of the Mueller firing, and perhaps correctly will be, you know, will be interpreted as a mandate. You know, I mean, there are other permutations. Mueller gets fired and the GOP holds the House. Oops. That's interesting, right? And that would, I think, make it very hard for Trump to get impeached, obviously.
Nate, for the Scottish teens on the betting markets, what would you say is a time range for, like, if Mueller's going to get fired, when you think he'd get fired, given, like, the events of this weekend?
That's hard to predict. Because I think I'm answering for Nate. I think, to our earlier conversation, I think it's more likely to be about peak than a fit of peak than about, like, a strategy. So, like, Jody and I were talking earlier, and Nate's right that it's, like, it's somewhat hard to fire Mueller. He can't just pick up the phone and have it done in 3 seconds. But it's not so hard that, like, if at any time Trump has an hour and a half, 90 minutes to 2 hours where he, like, really wants to fire Mueller, he can get Mueller fired. In the sense that, like, if he just really tries for 90 minutes.
Well, that's not clear, though. Mueller's not like anyone else. That's why I say, like, if Jeff Sessions is fired. By the way, you could also have a preemptive fight over the confirmation of Pruitt or whatever. I mean, my understanding is that.
Wait, but why couldn't Trump just say Rosenstein, fire Mueller? Rosenstein says no. Trump fires Rosenstein. Next person, next person, next person, until he does it, right?
Again, I'm not a legal scholar, but it's messy at the very least. It's not,
but that's,
like,
that is what the Saturday Night Massacre was.
Yeah, but you don't just, it takes more than a tweet.
Sure, so, but it's, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. It takes a phone.
That's why I'm saying 90 minutes.
Actually, can I ask?
I will say something. In this morning's Times, there was, you know, who comes after McCabe, Rosenstein, the woman who left. And then today there was finally, like, fourth in line, who could fire Mueller is this random guy who we've never heard of. And now I know everyone will be Googling.
Yeah. So let me ask one last question about the sort of GOP calculus, and then we'll move on to the Democrats. We've talked a fair amount, Micah, about how there's a political calculus that goes into breaking with Trump in addition to a sort of stand about who he is and, you know, your sort of morals and your ideals or whatever.
Jody, what are you talking about?
What?
You think politics would factor into the response?
Believe it or not. So if now Trump fires Mueller and the GOP breaks with Trump, does it say maybe more about Trump's political standing than it does about some empirical stance about his act? Meaning, you know, we're in a midterm year, Trump's brand is down, so that might be the actual thing that motivates someone to break with Trump.
Well, it would. I wouldn't say it would motivate them. It would clear the path for it, though, right? Maybe that's a distinction without a difference. But let's say we think about a third of congressional Republicans would denounce firing Mueller. If Trump's approval rating were 60%, then I would say it would maybe only a fifth of congressional Republicans would denounce firing Mueller. So it's sort of a necessary precondition to Republicans denouncing a Trump move, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there are sometimes like the old white pundits on Twitter who are like, this is outrageous. You know, where is Republicans' backbone? And it's kind of like, well, politics is politics, guys. And for a Republican to turn on a Republican president is a big deal. Politics involves both real and acted out moral outrage, but it's a political decision. What I was trying to say earlier with, like, the earthquake comment is, like, I think the equilibrium could shift relatively quickly, right? Once you begin to lose, like, the Ron Johnsons and the Pat Toomeys, and by the way, the GOP says, hey, look, wouldn't we rather have Mike Pence?
So we think that's the whisper. Well, we think he would lose them if he fired Mueller. I mean, I think he'd lose the Toomeys of the world.
To me, the modal scenario is that you have kind of chaos and they kind of try and patch things together, but then the midterm decides everything, right? And the midterm decides whether this might cost Trump his job.
You could also see Pence being a lot more aggressive behind the scenes. He's already set up a pack for the midterms. Like, he's
already distanced himself from Trump a little bit.
Right. I mean, that's kind of how Nixon was eventually done in, is that Ford kind of had a coalition of people who are like, we're with Ford. Like, we can't. You're sort of an untenable person right now, right? Like, you needed to have someone where you're like, okay, do you want this job, Gerald?
Gerald.
Are you going to do a good job, Gerald?
Jerry, you want this job, Jerry?
Let me revise slightly.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I do think you would see, more likely than not, some effort to restore the Mueller investigation.
That's my question, right, yeah.
I think you'd see that, and then questions about, like, impeachment would be punted
right
to the midterm.
That would be my guess, too. But let me flip this before we get to Democrats, though. So we don't know what Trump knows, obviously, but again, this is something Jody and I were talking about earlier, but if you were Trump, would you rather have a fight about firing Mueller, or would you rather have a fight about Mueller's findings eventually? In other words, could it be smart to fire Mueller politically, because that's not a good fight, but it's a better fight than fighting over whatever he finds?
You think that's what Trump is doing?
No.
No, but perhaps someone around Trump might say that to him.
I think
or maybe listens to podcasts.
Have to be pretty bad.
To be worse than firing Mueller.
Firing someone because he's conducting an investigation about
is
you
bad.
Looks really bad. Yeah. Looks really bad. I mean, if there is the P-tape with Vladimir Putin in the room or something.
My argument, maybe we can get back to this at the end or, you know, down the line, but my argument was basically that if Trump cares more about protecting his business interests, to put it very, you know, crudely, cares more about protecting his business interests than being president, then maybe sacrificing the presidency by doing something over the top, getting impeached, and then we just move on.
I feel
and
like
we
that theory that has died out. A death that it needed to die.
Because
I mean, he cares about being president.
Sure.
Because the business is the same as being president. He cares about his image, right? And the business was in pursuit of that, and being president is in pursuit of that. Yeah, maybe it ends up being the same.
Okay, let's move to Democrats. And Nate, you kind of hinted at it a little earlier, but there is some talk, and I'm curious if you think that it's real talk, about Democrats, you know, passing a law or doing something to prevent Trump from firing Mueller or setting up a sort of system for them to then reinstate the commission if Mueller does get fired. Do you think we're going to see activity like that?
We've seen activity like that, but it hasn't gone anywhere because they're in the minority.
Yeah.
And they're not going to get enough Republicans to support that preemptively. I think Mueller would have to be fired in order for some sort of serious legislative action that would have a chance of getting passed to actually see that get started.
Or Trump takes some really extreme action short of firing Mueller. I don't know what that would be.
Did you hear the things I listed at the beginning of the show?
It's obviously, you know, it's something that the Democrats are already on. They already have people who have researched whatever, you know.
Right.
You know, they've gone back in the archives and said, like, this is how you keep a special counsel in play. So it's something that they could call up, but it's not going to happen right now.
But if Trump said, like, I'm going to fire Mueller if he... No, I don't know. There's nothing he could
really
do.
I'm going to do it in 1 week and 2 days.
There is,
stop me.
What there could is he something. Do? If he fires Sessions or anyone else in his cabinet and then has to replace that person, the confirmation vote could become a big conflict.
And could be linked to a bill. You know, there could be some kind of deal.
If Trump has to get a new attorney general appointed, that's a big freaking deal, unless that guy is a Boy Scout or a
And that
Girl
becomes
Scout.
A proxy, basically, for you want to get
rid of
Mueller.
He fired his Boy Scout.
Did he?
Tillerson was a Boy Scout.
Tillerson was a Boy Scout.
Literally.
But you're saying, Nate, that fight would become basically a proxy fight for protecting Mueller?
If he nominated Pruitt or someone who was seen as a hack?
If he nominated anyone, I think. I think it would become a proxy fight.
Eric Holder.
But you don't think if Trump fired Mueller, would Democrats go further than that? Would they just jump to impeachment?
I think
I'm sure someone would put up articles of impeachment, yes.
Yeah.
I believe they already have.
Democrats would.
Yeah.
As a united front with leadership backing.
No, I think Pelosi in some sense would have some incentive to
play
go
cool.
along, right? Let Republicans hang themselves and then kind of assume that you will get impeachment ready for, you know. But I would say this is an outrage, and the first thing we have to do is make sure that the investigation can continue. You know, we are canvassing our members about whether this is an impeachable offense, and the voters will have a say in this. I mean, that I think... Well,
wouldn't
weirdly,
the Democratic base be storming the gates for impeachment, though?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
No, I guess it is an issue.
They're eventually going to have to accede to the base. I don't actually buy any of this bullshit. Like,
okay, maybe you're
right. They're not going to impeach him. They're going to wait for him to run in 2020.
It'll be really hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, what would it be like? Describe everyone the first 48 hours after you get that.
All right, so it's Friday. Friday at 6 p.m.
It's either Friday at 6 p.m. or like Tuesday, a really busy for us. Like either Tuesday at 10 or Friday at 6.
I am on my way to a dentist appointment. Trump fires Mueller. I think within 12 hours, there are protests in front of the White House. top Republicans have called for a special select committee to pick up the investigation and introduced laws to, you know, there's a bunch of laws introduced, not passed yet, but introduced to try to protect Mueller or replace Mueller.
What's Trump tweeting, Micah?
Trump has a
witch hunt,
a 16-part tweet storm explaining the move. Republicans, a sizable minority, no, maybe even a plurality of Republicans, both elected officials and voters, rally to Trump's defense. And that's the beginning.
Good fanfic.
That's the first 24 hours.
That's the first 24 hours.
Okay, we got to start wrapping up here. But let me just get really, really quick response to this. We've sort of touched on it. But in your estimation, thinking about all we've discussed about how it would play out, if Trump fires Mueller, does it basically guarantee that the Dems will take back the House?
Hell no. But it increases the likelihood they will. And it really increases the likelihood of the mega tsunami where it overpowers the barriers from gerrymandering and the GOP loses 60 or more seats.
But everyone on board with that, basically?
You know, but there's uncertainty. You could argue that maybe apart from the Comey firing, that people haven't reacted that strongly and partisans will come on board. I mean, there are counter arguments here, but like, that's not what you want to be. You know, we talked before about Trump's best moments are frankly when there's not a lot of news and people focus on the fact that like they actually feel okay about the economy.
This would be news.
This would be enough news to last through November.
How much would Trump's approval rating drop?
To 30 is really.
That's what I was going to say. 34. 35, I was going to say 34.
You guys, that 35. Is just like not something you should be excited about. You've had mine meld on.
And Claire, what about the Senate? Do you think that this would somehow change the calculus on whether the Democrats could take the Senate?
I think it's probably better news for people like Claire McCaskill and Joe Donnelly. Yeah. Democrats who are trying to hold on to states that are red, because they can sort of maybe get those reluctant Trump types by saying, like, listen, I'm a legislative check on this guy. Like, you need people like me in office who are, you know, centrist, quote unquote, and who are. But the legislative check thing on a president who you're worried about as a voter, I think, is a powerful argument and probably good for Democrats in red states.
No, and it goes back to kind of Trump's approval rating. So Claire's piece on the reluctant Trump voters, you know, those voters are about a fifth of Trump's supporters, right? So if you take a fifth of his approval rating right now, which is 40%, 41%. Nate, what's a fifth of 41%?
Eight.
So that's 32% if all of them. So 34, 35%. And then if you translate that into red states like Missouri or Indiana, that's a big boost for those red state Democrats.
Okay, let's leave it there. And we're going to tack on a quick conversation here. So we're going to go from the sort of slightly speculative, big think kind of stuff to something very granular that is happening tomorrow. The Illinois primaries are this Tuesday, and we kind of want to zoom right in to one really interesting race, which is the Illinois 3rd District, which is a safe Democratic seat, but there's a very interesting primary race there. So incumbent Democrat Daniel Lipinski is being challenged from the left by political newcomer Marie Newman. So Claire, you want to talk a little bit about who they are, the contours of the race, Lipinski versus Newman?
Yeah, Lipinski is more conservative Democrat, so he votes against abortion rights typically and voted against Obamacare in 2010. His father used to hold this seat. He sort of, you know, I guess in sort of classic Chicago stereotyping of the Democratic Party, it has a little bit of an old school machine feel.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually interestingly gotten the support of the Susan B. Anthony List, which is this this group that usually supports conservative candidates, but it's an abortion, anti-abortion group. Anyway, so there's some interesting forces coalescing around it. The DCCC is sort of nominally supporting Lipinski. And then you've got Newman, who is running as a progressive, who's saying Lipinski is a Trumpy Democrat. You know, he gets invited to the White House. He doesn't have the kind of politics that this district is sort of morphing into, which is more liberal. So that's kind of the contours of it. And she's gotten the Bernie Sanders blessing, which is pretty important. She's gotten a few members of the House's Progressive Caucus to come on board with her. So it's kind of a classic whither goes the Democratic Party race.
So, Mike, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Whither
it's a
going?
Classic wither.
Wither.
But that district, Claire mentioned a little bit that it's shifting in a way that maybe others are. So, like, what are the demographics of the district, and how does that affect this particular matchup?
I feel like Nate should answer this because it's from Chicago.
Oh yeah,
it's suburban. Sweet it's
home,
suburban.
Chicago.
It's like
not from Chicago. He lived there.
Well. Yeah, he lived there for a while.
So okay, maybe the two of you can do it together.
All right, I'll give the type line. Nate can give us the sort of
yes.
you know more street I've, level.
I live
view.
In Chicago. I don't know. This is not Chicago. This is the burbs.
So it's suburban Chicago.
I don't know suburban Chicago.
It's democratically named.
I know some cities the burbs and the city get merged together. Chicago is Chicago. The burbs are not Chicago.
You hear that? Suburban Chicago.
So
listeners?
I stand by my original.
Nice. They have wonderful schools and beautiful homes.
Judy,
I stand by my original stance of having Micah answer this question.
Suburban, democratic leaning, but not overwhelmingly so, but not super marginally so either, which is sort of what makes this primary interesting. So the Cook Political Report has what's called PVI, Partisan Voter Index, which measures the lean of these districts. They have a D plus six for this district, which isn't that democratically.
In 538 PVI, where we double the number, it's 12.
Because it makes it understandable in terms of a margin.
But a 12 means that like in a neutral year, you'd expect the Democrat to win by 12 points.
And Clinton won the district by 15 points. Obama won it by, I think, 14 points. So it's not like super blue, but it's blue.
But is it blue in a way that kind of indicates that it would be ripe for this kind of primary? Is it moving in the
so Lipinski
progressive
let's use,
direction?
Yes, let's use a 538.com tool, the Trump score.
Yes.
Lipinski's Trump score is 35%, meaning he's voted with Trump 35% of the time. You would predict someone from a district that blue would vote with Trump 34% of the time. So therefore, he's kind of like about replacement level for a Democrat, or about average, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. He's not like super progressive, but like also like it's a little bit wrong to stereotype him as like a centrist. He's not. I mean, he's like kind of typical for like a purplish blue district Democrat.
I think it speaks more to the environment of the party where people say, listen, this seat's going to be won by a Democrat. Let's experiment here and see, you know, can we get a progressive groundswell that takes Newman into office, or is this going to be like, okay.
I think that's the important point of like people bring up the Tea Party all the time. But the thing about the Tea Party, one of our contributors, Nathaniel Rakich, is writing about this. But the thing about the Tea Party is those challenges were all over the place. They were in moderate districts. They were in super conservative districts. They were suburban, rural, city. Like they were just all over the place. This district is Democratic leaning enough that even though Lipinski is fairly in line with the district, if you're a national Democrat, you can reasonably argue, hey, we can get more out of this district. You know, Lipinski's pretty in line with it, but this district is blue enough where it will support a more liberal.
It's kind of win-win.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And now, that's arguable. Maybe Newman would
maybe
do
they blow
worse,
it.
Yeah. Right?
But is that something we are seeing more of around the country? Is this you know people? There's a lot of interest in this race. I mean, it's being talked about on the 538 podcast. But
big time.
But is it representative of some larger trend? Are we going to see these kinds of things popping up? And then I guess to your point, Micah, are we going to see it mostly popping up in districts that are already safe, or is there a chance, like the Tea Party, of the Democrats,
look at Diane Feinstein
hindering themselves?
Yeah, I think it's a little early to answer that, I think.
You're seeing a lot of enthusiasm for Democrats in primaries. I brought up Dianne Feinstein because she's getting challenged by this guy, Kevin DeLeon, who's a progressive, and he's kind of trying to make a splash. Like, he's sort of trying to get his name out there. I think most people agree that Feinstein will win, but it's sort of just like this voicing of, we are California, we are progressives, and, you know, like, why? I'm sure he's thinking, like, why not? Why wouldn't I challenge her? I have a chance. I think the races that have been getting the most attention in the Democratic primaries are the ones that are too crowded. By a strategist's look, you would say the races in like Orange County have too many Democrats in them and you risk cannibalizing and, you know, they've had people kind of step out of some of those races. You're kind of like, you're generally just like worried about people getting too enthusiastic in the primaries and being like, I want to run. But I don't know. I can't speak off the top of my head of other.
It's early.
Other races
I think
that
we'll
are
see
like,
this
yeah.
develops.
There's Cynthia Nixon.
Yeah.
That's true.
Everyone just got that email as well. Did you just get that email?
I got
an email that she officially, from her campaign, officially announcing that she is running for governor of New York.
I'm fascinated.
Running on the MTA, which is like a very New York City kind of issue.
Uh-huh.
Why are we talking about that?
I don't know.
No, but
But it's a progressive challenge. I mean, it's
yeah.
It's the classic de Blasio Cuomo feud. de Blasio was elected as this like super progressive mayor and like we're going to change everything. And Cuomo's like, you know, this more moderate Democrat who's like, I get things done and like I do things and I make things happen in Albany and blah, 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 blah. And they have this terrible feud with each other. And I kind of feel like you know, you're seeing that it replicated again with the Cynthia Nixon thing, whatever. That's New York. But all over the country, I think you're going to see people doing like the de Blasio Cuomo, which is just getting in like these sort of internecine fights with each other, saying like, listen, your moderation isn't actually getting us anything.
Cuomo is more popular than you would think by listening to like New York City progressive Democrats, right? More popular among Democrats statewide in New York. So it is like a little bit of a caution that like there is energy and fundraising on the left of the party. Increasingly, I think the media kind of is sympathetic toward left-leaning candidates. But there are, in these blue states, there are a lot of centrist Democrats.
But even the Tea Party didn't cost Republicans that many seats.
So what are you saying then?
This worry that this enthusiasm could go too far on the left, and they'll primary a bunch of centrist Democrats and lose a bunch of districts they should have won, I think is overblown.
Well, like in a D plus 12, 538 PBI district in a blue leaning year,
that's
Democrats
safe.
are not likely to lose that seat either way. If they were talking about primarying Joe Manchin, then they're being self-destructive.
Right. But you kind of have to go race by race.
Same with Feinstein in California.
Yeah. There's a 99% chance that Democrats are going to win that California seat.
So just to wrap up, I mean, I think we are going to do some more conversations both about specific races, but also this general notion of the primaries. But Micah, you said it's a little too early to know, you know, how big of a trend this is. When will we start to know? When do the sort of, I mean, we just got an alert from Cynthia Nixon. Is that going to start fast and furious at the spring, or when are we going to sort of have
it starts really this month?
Yeah.
Like you're seeing us, we're talking about it. The first primaries this month. And I think, you know, by the summer, I think we'll be able to say, we'll be able to characterize Democratic primaries writ large.
Gotcha.
Wither thou Democratic primaries.
So everyone use wither once more on this podcast.
Writ large just felt to me writ like large something well, Claire what, would say.
Or you could use Trump, where he said, what was it? That there was.
There that there
in
were.
That, in that there that was.
Would that it were, there were a case against...
In that there was no collusion.
Well, that there like collusion were alleged.
I should make fun of your speech patterns more, you guys.
I wasn't making fun of it.
I was impressed at the use of wither.
If you start using the subjunctive tense, then you know it's fake.
Subjunctive?
I
learned that in Spanish class.
I'm an editor.
Yeah. We use it naturally, Micah.
Nate Silver, thank you very much.
I'm trying to use the subjunctive. I forget how it is. I would thank you if I were able to.
I think that's the passive-aggressive tense. Claire Malone, thanks to you.
Thanks, Jody.
Micah Cohen, thank you.
My pleasure.
And a quick plug. I haven't been doing much plugging lately, so for Nate's sake. But a very quick plug. I was recently on this podcast called The Fifth Column, which is a great show. Has a bit of a libertarian bent, but it's very fun and sharp. And Camille Foster and Michael Moynihan are on it. It was great, so I wanted to give them a quick shout out. And they drink on that show. Just throwing that out there.
Oh, we should drink.
They drink on that show. They drink on that
Believe
show.
Me, if the Mueller firing happens at 6 p.m., that's going to be a lit podcast. I wish.
Go listen to The Fifth Column.
End on that. That's your opening.
I wish I were able to thank you, Jody. That's the subjunctive mood.
I appreciate that.
I wish you were able to
as well, I guess. My name is Jody Avergan. Galen Druk is our producer, and Tony Chow is in the control room. You can get in touch by emailing us podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments about the show. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store, or just tell someone about the show and how much you love it. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon.